You're listening to Soundside. I'm Libby Denkman. This month marks the 40th anniversary of the deadliest mass shooting in Washington state history. It started with a robbery at the Wami Club in Seattle's Chinatown International District. 13 people were killed.
Police were called to Maynard Alley just before 1 o'clock in the morning. There, they found a man lying in the sidewalk with a
Two men were ultimately convicted for the murders. A third served 28 years in prison for robbery and assault. Longtime Seattleites remember the Wami shootings as a tragedy. But journalist Maliha Syed says the community endured a second blow. The way the story was portrayed on the 5 o'clock news and in newspapers hurt Chinese Americans and the CID neighborhood for years to come. Maliha is the community's reporter at Crosscut, and she wrote about how the story of the Wami murders was reported differently by mainstream publications and community-led news.
When I first jumped into it, a lot of people seemed reluctant to talk about it. And I think that's because that night was tragic for communities in general around Seattle. It was really shocking. But I think for Chinese Americans in particular, it was also just really personally heartbreaking. A lot of the people who died in this shooting were community members. So people knew them, you know, either they worked with them, went to school with them, they were friends of friends. So I think my biggest takeaway was just it was really personally heartbreaking when this tragedy happened.
And at the time, you write about this international spotlight that came to the CID because of the shooting. What was the prevailing narrative in mainstream media about the Wami tragedy at the time?
The mainstream publications that really focused on it looked at this as kind of felt like a crime story. And there were just implications that came with that. Like, I think even at one point in my story, one source said the widespread impression was that this was gang related, and it wasn't at all. I mean, it was just this really tragic incident that happened because three people were robbing this club. But I think there was this narrative that it was gang related or there were continuing dangers to the neighborhood. The other big thing, which I touched on in my story, is just there were a lot of stereotypes that filtered in through mainstream publications' coverage of the event. So kind of these implications that these immigrants and these people are shadowy or secretive or in some way just not being fully transparent about what has happened. The stereotypes and sort of the narratives of like danger and secrecy seem to prevail in how mainstream publications covered this.
Yeah. And as some of the journalists that you interviewed who covered the story at the time point out, many times these reporters, English-speaking reporters, would be trying to interview victims' families who these family members didn't necessarily have a handle on English. And so their reluctance to speak to media, maybe their desire for privacy at the time, was spun in the media as some kind of secrecy, like they had something to hide. I mean, it was a really stereotyped kind of coverage. What did you hear? What else did you hear from folks who covered the story at the time, journalists who were in the community, lived in the community?
Yeah, so I spoke with Ron Chu, who was the editor of the International Examiner, and Asunta Ng, who recently retired the Seattle Chinese Post and is currently the publisher of the Northwest Asian Weekly. And they had kind of different approaches to mainstream publications, because I think, like you said, Ron Chu was quite critical of the way that they came in and seemed to be hounding people who just don't speak English and so can't really give interviews. And he also pointed out that there wasn't really an awareness of the fact that these communities are also scared. And so I think he, in particular, Ron Chu, tried to be careful to not over-report on these communities or report on them in a way that felt exploitative, because he, as he said, belonged to those communities and lived among these people. And so he was less inclined to just report on this as a news story because he knew that these were people's lives. And then Asunta was also tried to be as respectful as possible, but I think was more comfortable and willing to connect with mainstream publications. And at one point she mentions in my story, she did that because she wanted to minimize the chance of stereotypes coming up in mainstream publications. And so being able to have people in the community talk to mainstream media, for her, it was almost like a bridge to minimize those stereotypes from coming in. Mm-hmm. Among other reasons, I think she also just empathized with the fact that more mainstream reporters were trying to get a story and were having a hard time. Yeah. Both of these reporters, Ron and Assunta, wanted to make sure that the communities that were sort of affected would be respected, but they just had different ways of going about that.
And of course, this happened in a really close-knit community, the Chinatown International District. How did that closeness affect the way the story was portrayed in the media?
Especially from my conversations with Ron, it seemed like that sort of closeness and wanting to just, you know, not keep rehashing the story over and over again, which is understandably really traumatic part of the CID's history. And I think the history of a lot of immigrants here. I think sort of that close-knit nature gets portrayed as secrecy or just an unwillingness to cooperate. Over time, it seems like mainstream publications came to reckon with the fact that this isn't necessarily a topic that people want to keep unraveling every 10 years or every anniversary. And so I think there is a greater understanding now, but at the time, it seems like kind of that close-knit nature got portrayed as secrecy.
Yeah, it really struck me that at the 20-year anniversary, you had relatives of victims just saying, you know, we have processed this, and you coming and asking us these questions in a lot of ways is digging that up and, you know, being invasive. I wonder if when you see the coverage of a tragedy like what happened in Monterey Park, a predominantly Asian community in California, and the type of coverage that's been done by the media there, do you think that we've learned lessons in the last 40 years since WAMI of how to respectfully cover immigrant communities especially?
Yeah, I think that's a great question. And as an industry, there seems to be a greater understanding that parachuting into communities, sort of hounding people without having any rapport with them is really dangerous. And so I do think we collectively have been able to improve upon that habit and try to avoid pursuing people for the sake of a story without really respecting, you know, their perspectives. But I think in my story, I mentioned there's one person who kind of called out the coverage of the Atlanta shootings that happened a few years ago that predominantly affected Asian American women. Mm-hmm. And they talked about how some of those stereotypes still come up. Like, I think the perpetual foreigner myth that like Asian Americans need to be identified as like a person of Asian descent as opposed to Asian American, like not fully assembling them or looking at them as American. I think that was one stereotype that they called out. I don't know if we're effectively covering communities to our best ability, but I do think we have come a long way from WAMI. I would like to think so. I think that we have some awareness that just jumping into a community isn't the best way to cover them and to build relationships and to build trust. And that's something that I try to do in my beat at Crosscut. And it is hard. It takes a lot of time. But I do think we've come a long way from then.
There's something about trying to help people tell their stories versus being extractive and taking from them that I feel like journalists need to keep in mind and in the forefront of their mind, especially when they're covering a tragedy like this. And I don't think we're there yet, just to hop in with my own two cents. But I do think that since WAMI, we have made some strides, like you say, but we still do have a long way to go. You know, even to this day, Maliha, people who don't have a connection to this tragedy, there's sort of that true crime industry online. They'll make YouTube videos investigating it. What do you think is behind that fascination?
Yeah, it's really interesting because when I first looked into this story, I mean, I didn't know much about WAMI at all. And when I got on Twitter, it was just, it felt like tweet after tweet of people saying horrible tragedy happened this day, never forget, remember this. But there was some disconnect and it felt quite callous, like unearthing this really tragic moment in a really voyeuristic way. I think when I saw that, it made me think a lot about, like you were saying, kind of that true crime fascination. I think as a society, it's really easy to disconnect from those events, either because a lot of time has passed or we have no connection to the communities involved, or we don't live in the same place where it happened. I think it's really easy to talk about something really tragic in an objective way or in a voyeuristic way, just because it's interesting and it seems fascinating. And can you believe this happened? And I saw a lot of that with WAMI. And I think...
Well, and let's be honest, it gets clicks. You know, we see that true crime stories get audiences online, unfortunately.
Yeah, I think in a lot of ways, WAMI kind of fits the bill of like, what is a true crime story? I think if you're looking for that, but obviously in my reporting, it's revealed that it's just so much more than that.
What were the long-term effects, do you think, of this story and the shooting itself on Chinatown International District as a neighborhood, as a community?
Yeah, I think one of the biggest things that I noticed is just looking at the parallels from that period to today. And I think at the end of the story, I kind of talk about just how a lot has changed and in many ways, little has changed. And I think one of the biggest things is there's still kind of this stigma, I think, of the CID and who lives there and the crime that's there, and it's scary and it's dangerous. I think there's a lot of narratives around that, and it's really harmful. And those are the same kind of narratives that existed 40 years ago, especially after WAMI happened. Asunta mentions that there was so much business at first because people were fascinated, I think, in the same kind of true crime voyeuristic sense. Like it's fascinating. So people are showing up to restaurants in the area, and then immediately there's just this huge economic drop off and people stop seeing business in their neighborhoods because there's these narratives that it's dangerous. And so that is one effect. And I think the other is just, it feels like that community, which is already tight knit, largely made up of immigrants, just got further isolated in the public eye. It seemed like they just kind of were forced to sort of shut away because their community is portrayed now as dangerous. And similarly, I think they naturally wanted to shut off because it was just constant, like this media coverage and barrage of people coming in to take pictures in front of this club. So I think there was some isolation that happened after, in addition to just very real economic drop-off and distancing from the businesses and people stop patronizing that area.
Is there anything else that you want to leave people with when it comes to either the lessons that you took away as a journalist on covering a story like WAMI, or how you feel the community has been impacted long term? Anything you want to leave us with finally here when you reflect on the 40-year anniversary?
Yeah. I think for me, just in reporting this story, it was kind of meta because I'm talking about how awful the media was at this time, according to a lot of people who were involved, and then I'm still reporting on it.
Sure,
so I think for me, it really, reporting the story was a lesson just on how to build trust. And that's not to say that I've built trust with everyone in the CID, by no means, but I think this story was my best attempt at trying to build relationships, build trust, and get to know the story before writing it and before reporting it. And I think that's something that journalists naturally will struggle to do, and I myself have struggled to do, because deadlines are very real and it's hard to take time when you have sort of impending publish dates. But I do think for myself and for other reporters, especially ones covering communities, I think this story was just a really good exercise and lesson in taking time, getting to know the sources and not rushing to report, because spending just a few weeks speaking with Ron Chu, with all of these people, it really paid off. I think it really helped me understand the full scope of this story before writing a really slim, narrow, uninformed piece on a terrible tragedy in this community's history.
Yeah. Maliha Syed is the communities reporter at Crosscut. Her recent story on the WAMI tragedy is called How Washington's Worst Mass Shooting Isolated Seattle's Chinese Americans. Maliha, thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you so much.
Thanks for listening to Soundside. Don't forget you can listen live on KUOW 94.9 FM Seattle at noon and 8 p.m. Monday through Thursday, or anytime online at KUOW.org or on your favorite podcast app.